self inquiry, Arthur Osborne. Shri Bhagavan is now as he was. To many he said, "You are not the body." We see now that he was not the body in his body's lifetime, as now guidance came to all who turned to him, whether they could approach him physically or not. Now, as in his body's lifetime, it radiates with peculiar force from his ashram at the foot of Arunachala. People say, "I am leaving," he said just before the body's death. "Where could I go? I am here. Not I shall be here, but I am here." He is here in the eternal here and now. He is here in each one's heart. He is here also in his ashram at Tiruvannamalai. He inaugurated a new path independent of formal rites and initiation to suit the conditions of our age, when true guidance is hard to find in any of the orthodox channels and when traditional forms of living do not fit into the patterns of life. It would have been a poor gift if it had been for his lifetime only. He is the guru now, and he was. Those many who never saw him in the body find his guidance no less powerful than we who did. Therefore, it is not necessary for any successor to give initiation in his name. The initiation was silent and formless, as it is still is. The guidance was straight to the heart, bypassing words and thought. Understanding is needed, and courage and devotion. The path is there and the guide to lead and support you to the goal. But how? It may be asked. Is one to know that one has been taken up by Sri Ramana Maharshi and become his disciple now, that he is no longer here in the body to confirm it? The same problem existed in his lifetime also. He very seldom confirmed in words having given initiation. It was to be understood. And what then? People who turn to the path require some method, some discipline, some technique. His grace supports his devotees on whatever path they follow. Whether there be in it more devotion or knowledge or action, whether fortified by ritual or not, whether within the framework of any religion or not, and if any change becomes advisable, if any forms or techniques or methods are outgrown and cease to be helpful, some indication will come. Guidance will not fail. Having said this, however, the opposite side of the medal also should be shown. That is that the method which Bhagavan always recommended in the first place, which he spoke of as the most simple and direct and put first in all his teaching, was self-inquiry. It follows, therefore, that such of his devotees as can practice it should. Some people have got a false idea that self-inquiry is a coldly intellectual method. It is no such thing. Intellectual understanding may be helpful up to a point on one's quest, but it cannot be the quest. "I am not this body. I am not the thoughts" may be a useful preliminary to the inquiry, but it cannot be the inquiry. The inquiry is not a mental investigation such as a psychologist might indulge in. It is not a probing into the faculties, urges, memories or tendencies of one's conscious or subconscious mind, but a quest of the pure I am-ness that lies behind all this. It consists of turning the mind inwards to the sense of being, the feeling of I am. Therefore, it is not verbal. "Who am I?" is not a mantra. Its repetition might perhaps help to steady the mind in the early stages, but can be of little use really. One hint that Sri Bhagavan gave was that consciousness should not be centered in the head, but in the spiritual heart at the right side of the chest, because it is not a question of thinking but of feeling and being. That does not mean thinking about this spiritual heart or meditating on it. When you want to see, you don't think about your eyes, you just use them. So also with the heart. A man is made up of acting, thinking and being. Being underlies the other two, because you cannot act or think unless you first are. But it is usually so covered over by them that it is not perceived. It can be compared to a cinema screen and they to the pictures projected on it. It is the screen that supports the pictures, and yet it is so covered over by them that it is not perceived. Only very rarely, for a flash, one is aware of just being and feels it as pure, spontaneous, causeless happiness. It is also pure, thought-free consciousness. The purpose of inquiry is to make one aware of being at will and for longer and longer periods. This means that although the term meditation is conventionally used for self-inquiry, it is not meditation as the dictionary defines it. Meditation requires an object, something to meditate on, whereas in inquiry there is only the subject. You are not looking for anything new, anything outside yourself, but simply concentrating on being, on yourself, on the pure I am of you. It is not thinking but suspending thoughts while retaining consciousness. Thoughts themselves are a far more persistent obstruction. They rush into the mind in an unending stream. You drive them out and others slip in from behind. You think you are free from these, and before you notice, you are indulging others. The only way is persistence, constant alertness, not to get carried away by thoughts, to see them aloofly like clouds passing over a clear sky and ask, what is this thought? Who did it come to? To me? But who am I? And so you bring your mind back to inquiry. But it is not only the wandering nature of the mind and the unending succession of thoughts that is the obstruction. It is also the ego drive behind many of the thoughts. This gives them power and makes them far harder to dispel. You may convince yourself doctrinally that there is no ego and have occasional brief glimpses of the being consciousness, which is unruffled happiness when the ego is in fact absent. But you are drawn to this girl or want to impress this friend or dominate this group. You resent this criticism or feel slighted by this person. You feel insecure in your job, cling to your possessions, hanker after money or power. And all of these are affirmations of the ego, which you believe not to exist. So long as they exist, it does. If there is no ego, who can feel anger or desire, resentment or frustration? This means that inquiry is not merely a cold investigation, but a battle. The ego or apparent ego has to be destroyed. There are paths which set you attacking the various vices individually, lust, arrogance and so on, and cultivating the opposing virtues. But self-inquiry is more direct. Such methods are like lopping the branches of a tree. So long as the roots and trunk remain, fresh ones will grow. Self-inquiry aims at uprooting the tree itself. If the ego is deprived of one outlet, others will develop. But if the ego itself is dissolved, the vices in which it found expression will collapse like deflated balloons. But it is constant warfare until the ego really is dissolved. That is what self-inquiry is aiming at. It does not teach one any more theory or doctrine. it is quite possible to know all the doctrine that is necessary before you start. Simply that being is and you are that. What it does after a certain amount of practice is to bring increasingly frequent and lengthy experience of pure timeless being, which is also pure awareness and unruffled happiness. This is not mental and yet the mind is aware of it. It is not physical and yet it is felt physically as a vibration or waveless calm. Once awakened, it begins to appear spontaneously even when you are not meditating, or to subsist as an undercurrent to whatever you are doing, to the routine of life, while you are talking, even while thinking. This is important with regard to method. It explains why Bhagavan preferred his devotees to follow the quest in the life of the world. Sitting daily in meditation is useful. In most cases, indispensable, but it is not enough. So far as possible, fixed time should be set aside for it, since the mind accustoms itself to them, just as it does with physical functions like eating and sleeping, and responds more readily. For people who are bound by professional and domestic obligations, just after walking in the morning and before going to sleep at night are excellent times. But apart from that, Bhagavan would tell people to practice inquiry always, to ask themselves, who is doing this? To engage in activity without the I am the doer illusion. Keeping up this attitude of mind throughout the day's activities is equivalent to remaining alert, to welcoming the sense of being whenever it comes. Constant alertness and remembering is necessary when not meditating, no less than concentration when remembering. At first, there will be frequent forgetting. That also has to be combated. The current of awareness has to be cultivated and fostered. Very seldom that there is achievement without effort. This is the path that Sri Bhagavan laid down. It is independent both of forms and doctrines. It requires no ritual. It can be followed invisibly by the housewife or shopkeeper, no less than the monk or yogi. The grace of Sri Bhagavan is available to all who turn to him, but it is those who strive on this path that utilize it the most fully and the most wisely. It is an unfailing support and inexhaustible treasure for them. Things, objects are only the perceiving of them by each of us as I, which is relative perceiving by divided mind, whose subjectivity is all that any and all of us are. Note, phenomenal subjectivity, what we are conditioned to regard as such, is a myth. It is the reflection of the moon in a puddle. As so often stated, there is no I but I. We, who, we.